Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
This is Danielle Oakes, co-chair of Ogletree's Technology Practice Group, also known as the Tech Place, where we provide labor and employment legal services to tech employers and users of technology in the workplace. On today's Tech Place Tickler, we're going to talk about some of the challenges involved in managing employees in an environment where the parties are largely working from home. Today's focus will be on cybersecurity and data privacy. I have with me Danny van der Zanden of our Cybersecurity and Privacy Practice Group. She's going to help us spot the issues and the solutions. Danny, in this new remote environment, employers fear a range of cybersecurity and data privacy issues, including system hacks, uncertainty about where data is stored, the ability to navigate network service interruptions and equipment failures. What can employers do to minimize these concerns?
So there are a number of different things that we look at in terms of how we help employers minimize the cybersecurity and privacy risks to information that is used in the course of conducting their business. The Center for Internet Security lists out 20 different controls, and NIST and other experts in information security focus on three primary categories of protection, and those are physical, administrative, and technical measures that employers can take and have their employees who are working remotely take to ensure that the information is protected as best as possible under these challenging circumstances.
What are physical protective measures?
So physical protective measures are the kinds of things you think about when you secure any physical space. It can be things like locking a computer to a docking station, locking the front door of your house, locking the office within your house if you're lucky enough to have one, where employer assets are being maintained, or if individuals are not working on an employer computer, which is, of course, our preference, that the computer or other device that they're using for purposes of performing work can be locked up and kept securely. Many of the information security breaches that we see arise in contexts like somebody leaving a computer in an unattended vehicle and somebody breaks into that vehicle and takes it. Or less likely today, where we're social distancing, but somebody leaves a computer or a phone in a taxi cab or on a plane or in some public space. So the kinds of things that we want to make sure employers are encouraging their employees to do is make sure that the physical space where they work is protected and that the individual, if they're traveling even short distances, carrying any computer on which employer information is kept, that they keep that locked and protected and somewhere that they be cognizant of where it is. In some instances, things like our phones have GPS tracking services that would help track something down, but that doesn't change the fact that if somebody leaves something where it can be accessed by someone who doesn't have duly authorized access to it, there's an increased risk of compromise to that information. The other thing that we ask is that employers identify and inventory any company assets that they are deploying to individuals who are working from home so that they know who has what. They know what to expect to be returned, and their IT department has the ability to deploy updates, whether those be malware, virusware, firewall updates. As long as the IT team knows who's got what, they're in a better position to be able to deploy those. So it's important to have a complete and accurate inventory of who's got what. Other physical protective measures include things like preventing employees from being able to attach an external device like a DVD or a compact disk drive where information can be moved from the employer's either system or computer to some external storage device. We also suggest restricting storage access to employer-authorized cloud-based storage repositories. So best to prevent your employees from being able to move information that belongs to the employer up to the individual's own, say, personal Dropbox or other cloud-based storage repository. Those are the kinds of things that make it possible to determine who's accessed what and keep those assets actually physically secure from outside intruders that might want to access information that they contain.
Those physical protective measures make sense. You also mentioned administrative protective measures, and how do those differ from physical protections?
So administrative measures are the kinds of things that we suggest along the lines of training and enhanced security practices. So from an administrative perspective, what happens to information that is accessed by individuals who can have the ability to see either employer confidential information or, even more importantly, in some instances, personally identifiable information or PII. So the kinds of things that we suggest on the administrative side of the equation are ensuring that access to information is limited to those who actually have a need to be able to get to it. So folks in HR clearly need to have access to personnel files, but others don't. So we suggest that employers, from an administrative perspective, ensure that they're focused on who needs access to what and that that access is provided on a most restrictive basis so that we're ensuring that we don't have folks who don't need to have access to the payroll actually have that access. Things like enhancing your IT teams and making sure that they are ready in the event that there is some intrusion to the system is another administrative measure that we can take. Ensuring that you have due diligence when engaging a third-party vendor and looking at what those contract provisions are and whether those individuals who are involved from the third-party vendor's perspective are taking reasonable and appropriate measures to protect information given the sensitivity of the information at issue. Updating and enhancing employee training are another administrative measure, and this one is particularly important. In many instances, in the middle of COVID-19, there are folks who have not previously worked from home who are now working from home, and they may not be aware of the remote work vulnerabilities that are out there. So deploying to the team that is now engaged in remote work the kinds of training that they need to know how to spot an attack or a potential avenue into employer information and how to report that is important. We're really focusing on increased scam vigilance at this point in time, both because of the fact that there are some additional sensitivities that we're seeing in terms of attack on employer systems or all computer systems, frankly. And also as a result of the fact that, as I say, there are many folks who haven't previously worked before and may not have been through an employer's phishing scam training program and have a real sensitivity for how they can be aware of improper emails coming in or links that may be problematic. The final administrative protective measure that we suggest employers focus on is that they have an incident response plan at the ready. Of course, all of your employees should be prepared to report an attack if they find one, and then it's important for the employer to be ready to respond to that, to know whom they would call from a legal or human resources or public relations perspective, how they would make a report and respond to it. And of course, having the IT team standing by at the ready to respond as well is critical.
Danny, I understand that there are increased incidents of phishing, as you mentioned. And what I'd like to hear more about is exactly how employers should handle those incidents.
So I think there are a couple of things that are important in this regard. One is to make sure that their employees understand the kinds of things that are coming across the internet now that are phishing scams that may look appealing to click into. And this is particularly important if anybody is working on their own computer, so they might be accessing their own personal email in addition to company email. we're seeing everything from offers related to COVID assistance, alleged links to getting funds under the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security or CARES Act, things that look like tips on how to prevent or cure COVID, other types of information. So I think it's really important to roll out to the employees who are going to be performing work, whether on a work computer or on a personal computer, that they need to be aware of these things. The other thing that we suggest is having written privacy and security instructions that are built into a formal work from home arrangement that documents the restrictions on what individuals should be doing when they're on either a company-owned computer or through the VPN, and demonstrates that the employer has taken measures to train the employees with respect to these phishing-type emails. Obviously, the best solution is to prevent employees from clicking on those, but it's also important that they understand, the employees understand what they should do in the event that they have clicked on something and it's not what they were anticipating, and that it is important to report it. The more quickly IT can react to an inappropriate phishing link, the better it is for everyone who's involved. So as I say, if we can document those in formal work from home arrangements and ensure that we can demonstrate that we provided appropriate training to the employees, that's going to be helpful in the event that there is a cyber attack or information disclosure as a result of a cyber attack. So I would suggest strongly that employers focus on taking those important steps.
What about technical protective measures? What are they?
Technical protective measures include things like ensuring that the data is encrypted and that the VPN is the measure that is used for accessing employer information or company information, adding things like multi-factor authentication, maximizing password strength. Those are important means to ensure that the technical equipment that is being worked with by the employees is less likely to be intruded upon by someone who attempts to reach into the employer's system. We do suggest that employers limit or have their employees limit VPN usage to business-related functions and that they centralize their storage or access points. As you can imagine, the more different places employer information is stored, the more vulnerable that information is, because a hacker needs to get into only one of those repositories in order to be able to access the information. So we want to try to narrow the playing field for the hackers by encouraging centralization of employer information. Also, steps like prohibiting gaming or personal internet usage while either on the VPN or on an employer's computer also will help limit access to employer information, which is exactly what we're trying to protect.
Let's talk about video conference security. I understand there have been increased incidents of video conference hacks. How can employers secure the privacy of the video conferences their employees engage in?
So there are a couple of different things that can be done, and this is similar to the way that we transfer files in some instances, where you might send a file link in one email and a password to that file link in a separate email. Using telephone conference or video conference technology in the same way is a way to help prevent unauthorized participants from joining those conferences. So we would suggest transmitting the meeting ID separately from the password that is needed. In addition, as is often the case, you may get what you pay for. So if you are using free services, those are less likely to have the kinds of security features that would be beneficial in protecting the confidentiality of information discussed on those conferences. So we suggest purchasing telephone conference and video conference capability as a way to lock that down. In addition, much of the technology that's out there will give you the ability to see who is participating in these conferences and to either allow folks in or bump them out if they're not authorized. And exercising those controls is a helpful way to be sure that only expected participants are actually engaging in the conference when you are conducting those kinds of things. So I would say that the most important thing there is to purchase the technology that you're using and to be sure that you separate the access credentials from the password that would need to be used so that you can be sure that you have only the right people participating in the conferences.
Thank you, Danny. We appreciate you joining us for this Tech Tickler. We'll see you in the tech place.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.